This is RSVP Update, episode 604, recorded Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. The next step for EOC. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, episode 604, as you probably heard in the show open. We don't know what this episode is going to be titled yet. Some weeks we do, some weeks we don't. But anyways, Mr. Bistro is here for one last time as a regular co-host. Welcome back.
Hello.
And also joining us is Tycho Elf from Clan Quest, who insisted I have him on the show this week to talk about next, so I didn't break his heart.
Hello!
You guys might remember Tycho was on, I believe, last September or August, maybe. I think you were on for one of the episodes after the arc. I'm not entirely sure, but Tycho Elf is from Clan Quest. So, enough of the introductions, and let's get to what everyone wants to hear about. And that's Next Angel of Death, a new PVM escape for people who want a more traditional PVM encounter, I think, is the way that Jagex marketed this initially. So when you guys first heard that Next Angel of Death was coming to the game as a surprise update for January, what was your initial thoughts?
Excited. I was really looking forward to one of the best bosses ever released to have almost a follow-up. And see what Jagex would do with it. Because the difference between this next and the last one was that we have EOC to work with now. So it'd be really cool to see how Jagex would handle something so beloved by all players and putting a new spin on it.
All right. How about you, Tycho?
Yeah. I had two feelings. The first one was skeptical because, oh, another boss, it's a PVM escape and so on. But then when I looked more into it, I saw that it's been something that has been requested for years, a hard mode next. And now Jagex took it to the drawing board and launched it. So I'm quite happy for everybody who asked for it. And what's more, it's a group boss. So
yeah, it's very no traditional solo. In that manner.
Yeah, so no solo, but a group boss that we will go into later.
Yeah, so first up, you need a frozen key to enter the ancient prison in the God Wars dungeon. This is the original God Wars dungeon, just north of Trollheim. And the frozen key is the area that lets you enter, well, the ancient prison where Nex is. You'll enter the bank and lobby area with a Zarosian kill count of at least 40, or wearing the ancient ceremonial robes. And then there's a hidden door on the south wall of the bank and lobby area where you access Nex. And as with other Nex requirement, this requires 60 agility and 60 strength in addition to high combat levels. So I think you're going to have that 60 strength requirement met unless you're doing magic or ranged, I suppose. But aside from that, that is all that they gave us leading up to this boss encounter. They did show us a trailer of some of the fight scenes and whatnot that we could expect from this. But beyond that, players were blind going in. And it was a while before the first kill was net, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But I was there present when the update timer went down to zero. And I just took my best gear and went out there and was met with a whole lot of people who also wanted to try out the next, and we didn't knew much. Like there was of course people who had studied the trailer in detail, frame by frame, but most of us didn't knew anything. So when we went out to the arena for the first time and looking at it, like wow, and then next came, we didn't knew anything. And that resulted in 8 deaths before we could advance deeper into the fight. So yeah, we didn't get any information about her mechanics or how to counter them or anything like that. So
right.
I must say I lost quite a bit of coin.
Yeah. How many times did you die? Did you die in your attempts, both of you?
I think I died a total of 8 times before I got my first successful kill. I know I had to recharge my key because I had only 5 charges left on it.
All right. How about you, Tycho?
Yeah, the first day I died around 8 times before I got my first kill. And since then, I think I have died a couple of more times. I think I'm about at 20 now.
Wow.
20 deaths.
That's more than a couple, but...
yeah, but we are much more efficient now that we have analyzed it, something that I'm a bit proud of being with the teams that are there on firsthand and experience everything and come up with these countermeasures while speaking to each other on Discord. I'm feeling a little proud of that, even though I know that I died 8 times.
Yeah. All right. So, Mr. Bistro, would you like to give us a bit of a rundown on the combat mechanics that one can expect to find when fighting Angel of Death?
Sure.
I'm looking at your first successful kill here. So let's tell us how you did this.
Okay. So I went in mass the day I went, mostly because a lot of my friends were not able to do Angel of Death, or they just weren't around when I was there for it. And one thing that will be really noticeable is that a lot of the phases almost seem the same. There are new mechanics, but at the end of the day, you're still fighting minions and beating these elements before fighting Nex and destroying her. And you're fighting all the way through that. It even goes to show when you look at the arena, and it is almost the same in that aspect too, where it's split into quadrants with a quadrant sectioned off for each of the minions or the reavers, which is something that you're going to encounter in, I think, the first phase. So the first phase, it's pretty much go ahead and attack. Some reavers will spawn. They will spawn in 3 of the 4 quadrants in which you need to kill them as soon as possible. Otherwise, you're going to run into a little bit of issues afterwards. I do not remember what they do.
I remember.
What do they do?
So the weavers have 50k health each, and if they reach next, they start from the corners of the quadrant and moving towards the center, towards Nex. If they reach her, they enrage Nex and makes her hit the tank really hard. And that is something that sometimes can one hit them, like over 5k of damage. So that's why it's very important. And her enrage continues to stack. So it's not a one-time attack, but something that will keep troubling the tank and mm-hmm. does something to be avoided if possible.
Okay. And another ability that happens during phase 1 is the shadow orbs. And you'll notice this as a kind of red flame that's going to come over the map. And it will hit 3 times. And all you really have to do is run around and kind of avoid these. And then just don't step back on them again. They will persist for a while, but they won't be there for the full fight. They actually do go away at some point. But that's about it when it comes to the first phase. There are methods of attacking this boss. that I don't know if I want to go over right now, but I think I want to go over after we've covered all of the phases.
All right.
As I don't want to confuse things too much here.
Let's keep it simple first. So we're on okay. to phase two right now.
Yep. Phase two is going to be a little bit more different. You're going to have some of the minions will now spawn. And you're going to take these minions down in any order. The order is important because towards the end of the fight, the order that you kill these minions will be the order that you'll have to destroy the towers.
So kind of like a Glacier then.
Yep, there's four towers and one for each of the quadrants, just like there are the four minions. And what a lot of people have come to do, which unfortunately in my mass never happened, was you would kill Glacies and then you would go in a clockwise or counterclockwise method. And this would also prove as beneficial later on when it comes to the one hit ability that Nex has. So you would kill those. And do you have anything to add on this?
Well, the four towers are containing crystals of the four elements, smoke, shadow, blood, and ice. And the four minions, or four mages, as I prefer to call them, are the same as the regular next encounter, Fumus, Umbra, Crudo, and Glacius. So, it's exactly as you say that the order makes it very convenient if you get it right. For example, since blood and ice are next to each other in the arena, it's beneficial to kill the ice mage and then the blood mage. So you can just run straight to it instead of across the arena and thus across the next.
Yep. And the other reason why it's beneficial is because the last hit attack in the final phase is you'll get a special bar that's going to show up where you have to run to the center of the map. Otherwise, you will get one hit and you're dead. And this will give you a bomb when you get to the center. So you have to run out back into the map and place this bomb somewhere. So when you're by killing these minions clockwise, you're freeing up the map as you take out the towers towards the end, which gives you and your teammates places to place these bombs so you don't have to worry about running over them while you're doing the rest of the fight because they're in the part of the map that you're not going to use for the rest of the fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Another special attack is the smoke wall. It's really close to Vindicta's fire attack from God Wars Dungeon 2. This hits much harder than Vindicta's fire. You got to be really careful if you're standing in it. It would take probably 2 seconds to take you down if you just don't move. But it's overall pretty easy to get around. One thing that I really liked about this fight is that it really made people want to bring any poisons again. And this is something that I feel has been lacking in boss fights
recently.
Weren't
we just talking about this last week on the show?
Yeah, we were. It was player weapon oriented. But this time, the bosses actually do poison you, and you will have to bring an anti. I brought a couple anti-poison flasks for each of these kills, along with my yak for food. And you drink one of those because that poison hits really hard. And if you're not paying attention, it can really take you out. So if you notice yourself starting to like really get hit, you want to just take a drink of that anti-poison. For me, I was ending up taking drinks of it, even though I didn't know I was poisoned, just to make sure I wasn't having that effect on me.
Right.
When I was
so
getting hits later on.
What are the blue crystal-like effects that appear at the boundaries of the quadrants?
The blue crystal effects?
Yeah, like there's a blue crystal thing that appeared right down the middle of the arena. It looked like crystal. Maybe it was something
else. There's actually four crystals like that. And they each do their own kind of little different thing.
Okay, they come up out of the ground.
You were about to say something, so go ahead.
Tycho?
To me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the four crystals. I can explain them if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, at the start of the second phase, Nex calls her followers, the four mages, in the form of crystals. And each crystal needs to be taken down. And if they are killed before a certain time, the certain bar has gone down, then the mages will spawn at half health, and thus making the fight much easier. So that's the four crystals I think you are talking about that appears in the middle of arena. But it comes to mind also another special ability that Nex has, that she targets a player, one or two, depending on if it's a mass or if it's just a few amount of people, and say, you stay down. And those people who are targeted turns into icicles and needs to be freed by you having to attack them and bring the HP down.
And this is what you were mentioning earlier, Mr. Bistro, where in the mass, no one was really doing this for you, right?
No, you just kind of had to deal with it. And as soon as you break out of that ice prison, because this isn't the one-hit kill kind of thing that you remember from original Nex, as soon as you break out of it, you're going to take massive amounts of damage. One thing I found is that if you freedom, as soon as you get out of it, you should be able to avoid taking that constant damage right early on. So just be ready to freedom as soon as you get out of it.
All right. And there's also something here. You didn't appear to get a drop at the end of this kill, so there is some anti-leeching mechanics going on here, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. And I'm sure that that's normal for a mass because there's just so many people in there. And I remember looking at the drop mechanics, and it seemed like the two base players as well as the top two DPS would actually get the drop. So that's why it's important to go either with friends when you're doing a bigger group or to just kind of not go in a mass.
Yeah.
But obviously, it couldn't be helped. This was my way of learning how to fight this boss, learn its mechanics in the safest environment possible, and frankly, with a lack of other people to come with me. It worked out fine, and I honestly wasn't too offended to not get any drop. I was completely satisfied with getting the kill and learning it.
All right. Are there any mechanics-wise things that you guys would like to mention before we move on, or you think we're good for mechanics?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
You cannot talk about a boss without talking about what kind of things you need to be prepared with.
That's actually what I was going to move on to, but please take us there.
Well, I want to just quickly mention the roles that I didn't mention before. And this can greatly increase the efficiency of a kill that I'd seen a lot of successful 10-mans do, which I had tried doing a couple 10-mans. And if there are videos playing of this, you'll see me fail in a couple 10-mans. But there are different roles, and two of those roles are tanks, where you are a base tank. And these two tanks will swap Nex back and forth in order to make sure that the stack that Nex gives on them that increases with damage over time can get reduced, so they can keep switching back and forth, reducing food, as well as if someone was to get iced, someone can take over. If someone needs to take out a minion or a reaver, the other person can take over, vice versa. You know, it's just important to have a couple bases. The rest of people are pretty much DPS. It's doing as much as you can to get up to your ultimates and not really having so much to worry about next coming after you directly. So if there isn't a ability where bombs are coming around after you. You can just honestly sit there with your sunshine or your I forget the range ultimate ability.
Death Swiftness.
The one I was using, that just allows you to do massive amounts of damage, and just hand it out to next, as much as you can. When Reavers come around, do that as much as you can. If you're not a base, you're doing DPS.
So what are we looking at for a tank? Are they melee tanks, range tank, mage tanks?
Any tank. I would say any tank, because if I haven't said it already, I have 11 kills on the next Angel of Death at the moment, and our tank had a mage gear, but there was also a ranged one, and but no melee one, because that wasn't beneficial for when switching. Because when you're switching tank, of course, the other tank wants to get some distance, because the melee attacks of Nex has an area of effect. So so therefore, to avoid damage, the tank had to get some distance, and that wouldn't work out if the tank had melee set up.
All right, that makes sense.
And this is, it's a different form of kind of walking a boss. If anyone's ever heard of that mechanic before, it's where you literally walk the boss, move your character, walk the boss, move your character, you know, just keep the boss off of everyone and really not take a lot of damage off of it. You are actually fighting next one-on-one and trading off with someone else to reduce that strain on yourself. And it's funny that, you say, Tycho, that you didn't see any melee tanks, because once again, melee shows that it is not the style of choice here. In fact, this was mostly mage, which I kind of confused me. If everyone was praying, to deflect mage, why were we not seeing as many rangers, doing this? I chose to go in as a ranger because I saw people going in with deflect from mage, and I think I had a fair amount of success with that. But when it comes down to it, it's mage or range, and I think you'd be okay with either. Melee is obviously just the no-go here.
I can't call it masses anymore, since we are now our 8-man team that I'm doing my kills with. But there was a difference between the mage DPSers and range DPSers. So I can't agree with you that just tank and US DPSers. We had it a bit more organized than that. We had a role that was called the debuffer. And that was basically a mage DPS that caused vulnerability spells on Nex every minute to make sure that the tank gets 10% less damage, and that Nex receives 10% more damage from everyone. And that's one thing. And okay. The Rangers has their stunning abilities actually binds the target for 10 seconds, and that is very useful for when handling the Reavers, while the mage only can stun or bind them for 3.6 seconds. So the Rangers are having a vital role here to make sure that Reavers do not reach Nex. And so that's one thing why we're having a mix of mages and Rangers, even though we only needed one debuffer. And we made sure that all DPSers weren't just DPSers, but they were assigned to a specific quadrant where they were going to handle the Reavers. And if a Reaver didn't spawn in one of their quadrants, they were going to head over to a neighbor quadrant and help those there before returning. So
that's good.
I
think that it's finally starting to shape up that you can have one of these combat setups that you would normally see in a game like World of Warcraft in RuneScape. The question, though, is the following two-part question here with in respect to RuneScape combat. And the first one is the debuffer. We said 10% debuff on Nexus attacks going in, and 10% of the damage done to Nexus will be increased by the debuffer. But when you look at it, is 10% something that you really need for a boss of this caliber? Because, I mean, on the grand scheme of things, it doesn't sound like 10% is that much. So I guess my question that I'm asking with this is, do you need the debuffer or the debugger?
I didn't do any fights with people debuffing, and if I did, I wasn't aware of it. And that's just because I was, of course, massing. Now, it's a completely different story from Tycho, and I can completely see why a debuffer would be like extremely important, because you're talking about more than 10%. You're talking about a 20% difference between the two when you put them both together.
Very
true,
actually.
And that is a big deal when it comes to healing yourself and being able to get through phases faster.
All right, well, that's good. And I've long advocated that RuneScape needs, support spells like that. So it's good to see we're headed in that direction.
Yeah, I love hearing about that. I wish I had known about that myself, and I just didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, with a mass, that's kind of hard to do. And then the second question is, we hear so much about melee being the non-obvious combat choice, everyone going for magic and range. Now, obviously, with Nex using magic-based attacks, I mean, it's the ancient four magic types, right?
Yes.
Blood, smoke, shadow, and ice. So that is, of course, going to be magic-based. But, given the fact where melee is in the whole evolution of combat scheme when it comes to bossing, do you guys think that they should have gone out of their way to make a specific role where you want to use melee in this fight?
I can't say that. Based on my, I think they did a very good job in making it mage based, and now I'm saying it from a perspective of lore, the shadow, ice, smoke, and blood perspective. I think they did a really good job on that. But melee based role, I can't say for this particular boss, I can't say it would have made sense.
All right. So let's talk about gear. What do we want to bring for gear and abilities?
It's really going to depend on the role. If you're going to be a tank, you're going to want to be bringing that tank armor. So I would almost say port armor for tanks. And then anyone DPS, if you can do it, either the original Nex sets or go for the tier 90. That's the Malevolent, that's the Sirenic, that's the Tectonic. You're going to want to deal as much damage as possible as DPS. And I think this boss really pushes that home. That's pretty much it. It's not really surprising for anyone who's come from the raids perspective, or Virago. It's kind of become set in stone what you're attempting to do. If you're a DPS role, that's what you're going to do. If you're not, you're going to be, the tank. So you're going to want to bring the tank armor. And maybe that's just because there's a lack of, diversity on the top tiers yet, and hopefully instead of continuing to move up, they kind of fill out the area in the 90s lower to actually level 90 equipment.
All right, what about inventory? Rocktails, you mentioned anti-poison, the best overloads you can get, I assume. There's no fire hazards that you need to worry about, so you don't need a fire potion.
I would say bring one. If you really feel you need it, you could bring two flasks of antipoisons. They're extremely cheap to make. They only take a Marantil and a unicorn horn. I made them myself and turned them into flasks. And then I would say bring a flask of Overload. You don't need to bring a combination potion here because unless you're going for the supreme overload, where you're getting the even better overload effect, I would just say a regular overload flask is fine. Then a bunch of super restores. I didn't bring any special prayer pots. I relied mostly on my super restores to take care of that and to negate any negative effects I was getting from Nex
What
abilities.
about Sarah Bruce? Is that an option for healing?
Oh yeah,
Yes.
you must get Ceridomin Bruise.
I didn't do Ceridomin Bruise. I never have. I've always sticked with Rocktail. And unless you're going for multiple kills and you're a beast at clicking on those Ceridomin Bruise, it's just never been a thing for me personally. I did Rocktails, and I would not recommend going over Rocktails because I think it's a little overkill for the extra 300 life points or so that you'd get from Rocktails to Rocktail Soups. So save your spice for something else.
All right. You guys ready to move on to some rewards then?
I will just comment that yeah, rocktails, and I did use the rocktail soup for a while, but then I went down to rocktails and with Sarah Bruce, and it works really good, and you can bank after each kill, so that was perfectly fine, and I can really recommend Sign of Life because there happen things in there that if you mess up, you can come back to life and get a second chance for an hour. So that's something I can really recommend.
I guess when we're also talking about that, if we want to go a little bit more into gear here, I would also recommend based on your combat style, do something to buff up your DPS. So use an aura like the Runic Accuracy. Forget what the range one is called. I personally was using I think Penance, just to keep my prayer from draining as fast.
All right.
Yeah, but the thing is, the DPS needs to really do damage in this encounter. Can I spoil how many hit points we?
Yes, please tell us how much HP we're dealing with here.
Okay, so Nex has about 2 million hit points, but with all the minions and everything that happens in the encounter, that lasts about 12 minutes maybe, you will have to deal about 4 million HP. So this isn't any small boss where 10% in your DPS won't matter. It will matter. It's 4 million HP. It will matter in the end. That's why every DPSer needs to know what he's doing, have a good rotation, and not only the rotation, but the armor, the weapons, everything needs to count towards the damage.
All right.
It's funny that you say the kill lasted 12 minutes because in my masks, and I know that I'm never going to hit this number again, I finished a kill in, I believe it was 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
Holy, that's really fast. Our record is 6 minutes with around 15 people. But yeah, but that sounds really fast.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad that I have that because now I'm never going to actually have some sort of like
Oh, they'll reset it one
good
day.
feeling for
Yeah,
I
we'll
hope so.
probably never get close to that.
Yeah. All right. So, what do we get for rewards from these? We know it's you can get the Imperium Core and the Blood Tentacle, which I believe is for the pet, right? Yes, that's for the pet. The Imperium Core, what does that do?
The Imperium Core, if you were to take a magic orb, that's basically what this is.
All right, so it's the offhand weapon. And then, yep. Of course, you also have the Wand of Prey Soul, which is the main hand variant. Currently going for about 169 million GP, so it's definitely up there. So with the reward, does the price for this get split, or is there a chance of you getting the wand yourself?
It depends on how you're doing the kill, just like old times.
All right. And, of course, these are level 92 weapons.
Yeah, the GE price is lying, though. The street price is significantly higher here.
It's not going to update that quick.
It's really high.
Yeah, the GE price is probably a good 900 mil off.
Oh. I see that they've also have incandescent and luminous energy on this main drop list, which I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I thought we were trying to get away from the idea of dropping primary stuff from bosses and, leave that to divination. I mean, incandescent energy, that's a level 95 energy that so many people have been gathering for invention.
It's actually 90, not 95.
What's the one at 95 then?
Luminous
energy is 90, incandescent is 95.
Yeah, there's a chance of getting both of these from this here. And, I mean, I can see what they're trying to do with this, but I heavily disagree with this because we have talked about many times before that if you are going to try and keep skilling viable, and there needs to be a nice synergy between the skilling side of the game and the combat side of the game, and you don't do that when you are dropping huge quantities of this energy from a bossing encounter.
Yeah. But this brings up another question. Is RuneScape's catalog vast enough for the items non-skilling related to be unique enough for each boss? Jagex has dug themselves into a hole making so many bosses and not enough unique things that can be pieced together to make these fantastic items that I feel that's the way they should do this in order to reduce these skilling items. They're getting themselves into trouble. They shouldn't just be dropping the item. They should be dropping pieces to the item.
Exactly. And, I mean, this would be part of the whole skilling plan that has been talked about before, that, okay, rather than giving the item, why don't we just give the parts to make the item and, have a good reason to train these skills? And, I mean, I don't know if that got glossed over in the mining and smithing update that we're going to be getting later this year, but it certainly feels like there's a huge opportunity missing here with all the people that are fighting next right now. So, I mean, it's good that I think that they are fulfilling a desire and a want for people to fight something that is very similar to how it used to be in the olden days.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there needs to be a forward-looking aspect of these bosses that refine the way the loot tables work. Because, I mean, come on. Let's look at these drop tables. 955 to 1206 magic logs. What point is there to cut magic logs if things like this are going to be coming into the game? I mean, what point is there to do that?
Yeah. Same goes for like the Onyx bolt tips. Like, how much less expensive would it be to train crafting if you weren't getting Onyx bolt tips from so many different bosses?
Yep.
This is clearly the main way to get your bolt tips.
Yeah. And I mean, you guys sound like you guys had a great time fighting this. And and I am genuinely happy that you guys and the combat community in general is happy about this. But at the same time, it feels like the whole skilling side of the economy, not necessarily the skillers in general, is being glossed over once again. And we're just tipping the scales further and further into the combat side, which I think by this point, everyone can agree that you need both to be successful. So, I don't know. There's not much we can do about it now that it's in game, but it's here. So.
Now, I was thinking about the energy as recharge.
Yeah, but I mean,
divine energy. So I could at least accept that.
But what's the reason? But what's the reason of doing energy if you're training divination and you want to earn a little bit of extra money on the side if the PVMers can get it on their own right away, right? And it's listed as a common drop. So you're going to be getting these amounts of energy in a huge amount. Like, let's say, I don't know, let's just say conservatively, how many kills per hour you guys think? If you're doing 6 minutes, 10 kills an hour?
Yeah.
And maybe two. And maybe two.
I would say at this point, a realistic amount of kills per hour would be 7 or 8.
All right. So let's just go 9 then for the sake of argument and say that it drops somewhere around 3,000 energy and it's listed as common. So it's not going to do it every time. So let's just say it does it 5 times and 5 times 3, that's 15,000 energy in an hour. And you know, that is a lot faster of getting energy than someone who is gathering divination for that same hour. So there's the point that we're trying to make right here, is that it should not be quicker to get items like incandescent energy and magic logs from a boss than it should be from the skilling content in general. So there's that, but there are also 3 new high-level prayers that you can get access to with this boss.
Yes.
With Appraisal Codex, the prayers being Malevolence, Desolation, and Affliction. You guys have any thoughts on these?
Or is it too early to tell? I love them.
All right.
I love them. I don't have them yet, but as soon as I logged in, when I was prepping myself for this boss, I read over what they did, and I was really excited.
Yeah.
They give bonuses to all your stats, but they also drain your opponent. So it drains the melee attack, strength, and defense for malevolence, and so forth for magic and range.
Yeah, desolation is for ranged and affliction is for magic. So basically these are improved versions of turmoil and torment and anguish then.
Yeah. And the distinction here is that these curses require level 99. They are the top
level top prayers that everyone's been waiting for forever.
Yep. They're here. They are the top level prayers. And I can officially say that there is no reason to never be not on curses after this release. Because if you've done the Light Within and you've received these top level curses and you have 99 prayer, why would you ever go back to regulars?
Yeah.
These are just clearly superior in every shape and form.
I think that we have reached a point in which the curses are and are going to be the way that everyone goes after you've done Temple at Sintistan. I think that's just obvious because they pretty much replace the traditional prayer book. So there's no point in arguing that.
Yeah, well, but Mr. Bistro, do you know that the new players have to take your overhead slot?
Yes, I do know that. And that is okay. When they say the overhead slot, they mean like
you can't soul split with it.
Yeah.
Can't soul split, can't protect. So that already cancels out many times where you would have loved to use it.
Yeah, but I think that this is clearly going to be the choice of action, because do you really need to soul split if you're DPSing with tanks that are taking all that damage for you? No, because you're not taking that damage. You might be taking it from a minion, but is that minion really going to be doing what the boss is doing to those tanks? Your goal is to DPS, and this is what these curses are for, and that's why I like them so much.
Yeah, I can see that, and there's going to be a use case for them. And I mean, also when you look at the ancient curses that are already in game for this at the end, like let's just compare Torment, for example. It's plus 10 levels for your magic accuracy and plus 10% damage, whereas Affliction is plus 12 and 12%. So it's only an extra 2 levels or an extra 2 percentage points. But at the same time, that might be worth it to you at the high level, right? So
When you come to a certain level, you are looking for the single percent that can change
exactly,
everything.
exactly.
And when you have a next angel of death that has around the 4 million hit points you need to deal, then that 1% can really make a difference. Because I think something we didn't discuss about the roles is that tank is generally the most important role, and I think it will continue to be. But I'm actually quite happy that the DPSers are getting much more spotlight in this fight than the tanks regular do. Because if with 4 million hit points to deal with both to necks and with minions, the tank can't do that. So the rest is up to the DPSers to handle it. And the tank can't either handle all the minions that spawn. The DPSers also have to deal with that. So I'm
And
actually quite happy that this is a boss.
that's precisely
I
how it
mean,
used to be back in the olden days.
Yes. So, but I'm quite happy that everybody has needs to stay alert and do their role, and not just the tank taking all the damage and it's good to go. But everybody needs to stay alert for the mechanics and do a great teamwork.
If we're not thinking about melee in the combat triangle, I am getting further and further more optimistic with the direction the combat, whatever they call themselves at Jagex,
Combat
the
Council.
Combat Council, are going with combat. They are doing the right thing. They are making specific roles for everything,
Except for
and
the
you can
drops.
choose to be, and you can choose to be something that you are like good at. Like, I'm good at like providing support, or I'm good at dealing a ton of damage, or I really know how to tank. And that's not something that RuneScape has really had, and that's something that is a real big strength that EOC is now just
Yes,
starting to take in,
definitely.
and it's really starting to shape itself out to be something
Right.
really
And you
nice.
know what? I think back in November, you and I thought when we were going to do that EOC special that in 2017 we would be talking about the fact that Evolution of Combat had been out for 5 years since 2012, and it was time to start looking at rebalancing some of the EOC things. But in the last few months, we've definitely seen some updates on the EOC side of things that have addressed some of those issues and have really started to shape EOC into what it should be, I think.
I'm really happy with the fact that Jax has some people that are dedicated into looking into this, seeing a bunch of numbers from all sorts of different abilities or play styles against bosses or slayer creatures. All of this just kind of coming together and creating a better EOC, a stronger EOC. I just don't understand why Melee is just so sidelined.
That's a
They
very good
really need
point,
to do they
but
need to do
perhaps in the
something on that.
future. All right. Anything else before we move on to this week's patch notes?
Well, I got a long list here,
Oh yeah, some of
but
your
yeah.
general observations. Feel free to just
All
run
of
through
this.
them.
One thing that I wasn't quite satisfied with is that the Nex itself, she isn't in the spotlight as much as I wanted to, because the majority of the fight you have to deal with the minions. The minions are the real threat. They will pack on you and give you a really hard time. So you have to deal with them as quick as possible. So I have to say that Nex is the lowest priority in the during the fight, and it gives that feeling that you buy a ticket to a movie and you go there and you see everything and like wow, and you get out there and I just had an encounter with Nex at the movie theater, and when you think about it, you realize that the minions are getting more screen time than Nex. And you're left with the feeling, did I really got what I wanted. I mean, I'm feeling happy and I'm really happy for this boss, but is this really about next? So that's one thing. And then I'm thinking about a bit about the long pauses between each phase. At the beginning, the next is talking between each phase, and I thought it was too long, but now afterwards, I think they have been tweaked, been shorted a bit. So not much to say there. And the rest we have basically been talking about the tank that's no longer in the center. About, oh, but we haven't talked about much about farming. About, is this a boss you can continually go to and hoard in some cash? Because this is much different than raids. Raids you have to reset every 2 days, mm-hmm. but next you can go at any time, and that's something that makes this a very social boss that is more easily reached.
That's
than,
also what
Yakumaru.
Worries me.
Yeah.
Why does it worry you, Shane?
For the reasons I outlined before, specifically with magic
just
logs
the
and
skilling.
Divine energy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. But we don't really have bosses that are as sociable anymore. And even this one is going to be a little bit harder because it does take a little bit bigger of a group. You could go do Calphite King with a smaller group and get a completely different type of fight as to if you were to fight next. And I think in that aspect, it's a good different form of social slaying, or not slaying, but social bossing based on your preference.
All right.
Yeah. But at least I'm very happy with it because I don't know how many roles there are in Calphite King more than the tank and the one who vokes it off, the insta-kill attack. But I'm very, very happy because I feel this is a very social boss that that gets in between Yakumaru and the Calphite King and other bosses that are soloable.
Yeah, I think this would be the most social boss if we weren't to count raids, because raids does obviously have that timer where you can just only do so much of it. On this one, you can just make a day out of it with your buddies. I would say that it really helps to be on Discord chatting.
Oh, yeah, it helps a lot.
I don't know if I could do this with a clan just over game chat unless everyone was so used to it that you just had a system down. Discord's really important. Or Skype.
Yeah, but I think this is a boss where everybody needs to stay alert. It's not the tank that's in the center. So if everybody knows the mechanics that threatens them and not just the tank, then I think this is a really good boss. And that's what I'm very happy about, that the tank isn't the only one that needs to know all the information about the boss, but everybody does, because next will threaten the whole team and so will her minions.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to the patch notes with that, if you guys are all good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okie dokie.
I would give this a 4.5 out of 5.
All right. How about you, Tycho? What would you give it out of 5?
Yeah, I'm thinking, it had both good aspects and bad aspects. I comment to the graphics looks really awesome. I have to give it a 4.5. Actually, I have to give it a 5 out of 5 because this is the first boss I actually feel really happy about. And I'm an adventurer. I'm not a PVMer. And I'm feeling happy just thinking about the bossing encounter. So just that warm feeling that I can't not give it a 5, so 5 out of 5.
All right.
Okay. Shane, how about you? Well, even though you didn't do it.
I didn't fight it, and I like the way it sounds. I don't think it's fair that I rate something that I am not a part of in game, just because, you know, it would be like asking someone who hates quests to come on this show and rate a quest.
All right. Well, 4.5 plus 5 divided by 2 is 4.75 for an average rating. So that's a high rating.
Very high.
All right. Well, patch notes this week, a few interesting things. This one ticked off a bunch of people last week. The unlock all permanent outfit effects from Death Store option on the trim requirements tab for the completionist interface now takes into account the latest Death Store rewards. So this is that weak amnesty that we were talking about last week for comp, or specifically the trim comp requirement to complete everything in Death Store. So some people happy about this, some people not happy about this, but it's in-game now and you lose your comp if you haven't done that yet. But I mean, come on, if you got trimmed comp, you can do a little bit more work. Examining a player's tiny death pit will now state how many Soul Reaper assignments they have completed. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, very nice.
Here's one that I really enjoyed seeing, and that is that there's now an option in the RS3 new interface system mode to have a legacy skin that basically makes the current RS3 interface brown rather instead of the dark purple that it is. You know, for me, I just find, for some reason, the brown to be infinitely more readable than the dark is, specifically when it comes to the chat font down below. So I am actually using this new color scheme just for readability's sake. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm using transparency, so that's my way of avoiding the color, and so I can see my surroundings and at the same time see everything clear as it is. But I really also like that. I talked about it to some people, and they really had been looking forward to this. Well, they never announced it, of course, but they were really happy about it.
Yeah, and I was a little bit surprised when seeing this. Oh boy, it's something that people wanted when RS3 first came out. Well, here we are. All right, moving on past that, we also got in the patch notes that they fixed some rendering issues and crashes that appear on older drivers or graphics cards. There are still some issues with integrated graphics cards, though. That's what I've been hearing. They've also added an auto-update feature to the NXT launcher, which is fully capable on Windows, partly capable on the Mac, and not required for Linux. I don't know about you guys on Windows, but for me, it takes a good 20 seconds longer now for the game to appear on the Mac with this. So a little bit of work that could be done with that. They also added the ability to have multiple clients open on the Mac now, so you can play your Iron Man account and your non-Iron Man account on OS X. And they added a Do Not Warn Me Again option when exiting the client when logging in, and added a Do Not Warn Me Again option on the graphics card malfunction warning page, which I guess is something you see if your graphics driver crashes while playing RS. I'm fortunate to say I've never had that. So that's what I pulled from the patch notes. And you guys have anything else that you guys found interesting that you want to bring up from the patch notes this week?
Yeah, the provoke ability.
Oh, what about
it? Yeah, they have been updated it. So before this update, the provoke ability would just do some imaginary damage to the boss, so that the boss sees you as the biggest threat because you have done the most damage. But the problem with that was that it could easily be out DPS, and the boss would walk away towards a DPSer instead of a tank because the DPSer does more damage. But this has been fixed, so provoke now does a really huge amount of damage, probably a million or two. So the boss won't walk away from you unless it's provoked by somebody else.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's something I always noticed when going bossing with other people. You could provoke, but sometimes it just didn't do enough and it just went away anyway. So you just kind of like weren't any good at provoking.
Yeah.
All right. Well, also in some other quick RS news this week, the Lava Lanterns have returned. They're going to be on Treasure Hunter once again from February 2nd through February 6th. And of course, the Lava Lanterns are the lamps that give regular XP and bonus XP at the same time. So each lantern gives 75% of the regular XP of a lamp the same size would give, plus the same amount of bonus XP on top, meaning 150% XP in total. So that's a nice thing to get before bonus XP weekend, coming in 2 weeks. Also, Premier Club, you have until February 5th to purchase Premier Club, which is, I believe, Sunday night. So if you have not purchased Premier Club and you are interested in doing that, our verdict was that Premier Club this year is a good deal, providing you are not on the $5 a month plan, which I know there's lots of you out there who are on the $7 a month plan or even the $9 a month plan. So if you plan on sticking around through this year, Premier Club's definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm. And my article from January talks about striking the grandfather, taking it away.
Oh, I read that. I didn't agree with that. Informer.rsbnb.com for that. So, well, we can talk
I'm
about that later.
I'm pretty good at doing things you don't agree with, Shane.
Yeah, that's why we have you on the show, because I just love spearing my victims and then spitting them out after I'm done with them.
Oh, I think
vice versa.
I recognize that.
All right, so some corporate news on this end before we get into updates that are on the way. Jagex named Phil Mansell, a.k.a. Mod Pips, as acting CEO following Rod Cousins' departure. We really didn't get to see much of Rod Cousins, did we, as CEO? He wasn't out there like Mod MMG was. With this move, also, Mod Pips takes over as COO, Chief Operating Officer of Jagex. And, you know, we know Mod Pips. He's been in charge of RuneScape and has become, you know, one of the chief designers, you know, right below Mod Mark and dictating the direction that the RuneScape product will go. So I think this is a good move for Jagex to put someone in the CEO and specifically the CEO position that knows so intimately well how the core product of Jagex ends up working. And, you know, you definitely need this when you have new investors and new owners coming from China, because what are they going to know about how RuneScape works? Whereas these people have, you know, a decade plus of experience, right?
Yeah. And anyone with a little bit of history knows that Mod Pips is familiar with the position. So I think we're in good
hands. Yeah, he's held it before as well. So it'll be interesting.
Temporarily, yes.
It'll be interesting to see if they keep him in here permanently and who they decide to bring in maybe after the fact. Because I think it would be a great thing if he stayed in this position. So we'll just have to wait and see. And, you know, it is traditional and sometimes actually done in companies where the COO becomes CEO. So it's entirely possible this could be a move that the board might be willing to entertain for a full-time position if they like what he does. Because you got to remember, when you have a set of new investors or new owners in the company, it's for that first year and a half or so that they're trying to gauge what their company is about and how they can best take it going forward. And, you know, I think at this point, it's abundantly clear that Jagex's core product has got to be RuneScape if they want success. I think we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting, and should signal some good positive developments going forward. All right, you guys ready to talk about February and what's coming for this month?
Oh, yes.
All right. So, some interesting updates for arriving in February. And, you know, February is a month of surprises and developer passion, and we really didn't hear too much about these until recently. And the month of February boils down to essentially the following: Invention Tools, Double XP Weekend, skill cape perks, and a mystery quest, which we still haven't been told much about. So let's start with the invention tools. We're going to be getting a tinderbox and a hammer, as well as 5 new skilling-related perks. None of them will be negative, and that's coming on February 6th. So a tinderbox and a hammer, which is obviously for smithing and fire making. I'm a little bit...
The fire making one made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah. And they said...
I was almost expecting this to come, and it ended up coming. An invention for fire making.
Yeah. And they said one of the perks is going to be that you're going to have the ability to dump your entire inventory of logs into a bonfire, a small chance of that happening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that felt OP when they said that, and that Poke's name was Pyromaniac, and the tester who did that, I don't know, remember his name, unfortunately, but he said it was a pain to test that perk, but it made me also laugh a bit that it's called Pyromaniac, and basically what it does is it's the same as the Gothic's crater boost, that you can dump all your memories into the crater all at once, but bring this to fire making.
Right. We're not going to pass judgment on the perks or fire making as an invention skill right now. I think smithing makes sense, and it's going to be interesting to see how this interacts with the mining and smithing update, but I am a little bit disappointed in that we're not seeing a crafting needle, an augmentable needle, because I think at this point, fire making is pretty dull as a skill, but I mean, what purpose is there for crafting aside from leveling it? I don't know what the answer is to that, and I think maybe invention could have helped to clarify that just a little bit.
Well, I actually think that some of the points they have talked about in the smithing rework, for example, that rune plate body is you can't smith it until you're 99, and who's gonna train up to 99 smithing before wearing a rune plate body? That's not gonna happen. And I see the same thing with crafting. So crafting could use a rework in the future, but at the moment there isn't much about crafting that makes it worth it. I mean, battle staffs, for example, it's tier 30 and 40, and then we have the skilling urns for other skills, and what more do we have?
Exactly, but that's a topic for another day, and has been discussed quite heavily in the past. Also coming on the 6th will be the 15-year Veterans Cape and the Valentine's event. Then fast-forwarding to the next week will be a timed Valentine's Day event on the 13th that won't be around for too long. And this will also get us ready for Double XP Weekend and Game Jam, which of course is the 17th through the 19th. And, you know, throughout this Double XP Weekend, they're going to be working on projects that they don't normally get to work on. And basically, they're going to be showing off this process to the player base of what's happening at the time. So it'll be interesting to watch from a game development perspective. Also, a slight change with the way Double XP Weekend works. We're going to get the full 2x multiplier for the weekend, but following that, the 2x multiplier will decrease through Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So that way then, if you're not able to train on the weekend, you can get some Double XP or bonus XP training in, rather, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So that's going to go down. You guys think that's a little bit too overpowered and they shouldn't do that?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. They talked about a cap whose numbers they haven't revealed or anything. But if that cap registers about how much you have been skilling during the weekend and make sure that it won't continue after the weekend, then I think it's totally fair for those who are busy during the weekends.
Yeah.
Maybe and, having fun with the families and other stuff, can return safely to the game and not feeling ashamed for putting time at skilling nonstop when and still can deal with real life.
Yeah, and it's going to be a question is if you spend more time on Double XP Weekend, are you going to get a higher multiplier? Or if you spend less time on Double XP Weekend, are you going to get a lower multiplier? That's going to be an interesting question to see what they do with that. I don't think it was revealed. But following that, they're going to be releasing something called Skill Cape Perks. Active and passive perks. This is an update that originally appeared in old school RuneScape. It's coming to RS3 with some tweaks to make it not as overpowered, such that you're only going to be able to have 3 Skill Cape Perks active at a time if you own a max cape rather than all of them, which sounds absurdly stupid. The examples they gave for these perks are that for the invention cape, it will reduce the charge drain rate of your weapon or your tool that you're using. For strength, it will allow the dismember ability to act to last for an extra 2 seconds long. So you're gonna store these perks by feeding a skill cape to your max cape or your comp cape or your trim comp cape, and then you're gonna be able to utilize them that way. Thoughts early on?
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah, I have mixed feeling. First thing, yes, I really like the idea they are bringing it in from old school, but at the same time, old school doesn't have what do you call it as much alternatives to things as RS3 has. I mean, we have lodestones. Only that makes our teleportation option out of question in a skill cape, and we have a lot of other things that old school doesn't have. So it brings the question, is there any space to add skill cape perks, or is it just
right
overfeeding RS3? But I really like the idea about the invention cape, about the invention cape. I really love it just by hearing it.
Yeah. You know, I honestly have mixed feelings about this as well, and I think I'm more towards the negative side of it, and here's why. First things first, the idea of describing a perk based on a skill cape, okay, that's fine. But what's to say that these perks that come into game are going to be balanced in a way that is going to not affect the game in a negative way? We don't know how this is going to work because you haven't had thousands and tens of thousands of people play with these perks active on their character. So you don't know how it's going to affect the way that we train the game, much like we didn't know how inserting the huge amounts of XP in Prifinus, the Elven City, would change the way that the game was played. So there's that side of it. And the other side of it, I think that for each perk that you add for a skill, it's something that could have ultimately been taken away with the idea, or put into rather, of the idea that you can, you know, siphon off some XP from your skill, put it into a pet or another item, and get a perk and use that for training it. And, you know, I think that, okay, so let's just make the skill cape the avenue for this. And what if you were to get one perk at level 99, one perk at level 103, one perk at level 106 and 109, 113, 115, going up all the way to 120? And what if these perks were passive and active in some ways that they effectively almost wanted to implement the skill mastery system that we were seeing? And you could, each time you would move through your XP, you would get access to an additional slotting of these perks. It would be kind of like a prestige system that we saw with Memorial to Guthix, but based on XP earned. So if we're making a skill cape the vehicle for that, why not take this one step further and say, okay, so you're going to get this perk when you reach 99. Now, if you reach level 120, you can reset and you can get another perk for this skill. And, you know, they could all be passives or they could all be actives. And assuming you were training the skill, you would get access to those. And maybe that's a better way of doing it than the max cape. And then the max cape could hold 5 instead of 3 of them. So this is just an alternate design that I've been thinking about with regards to this update, and a way that it could have maybe gone a little bit further in an attempt to create training beyond level 99 and allowing people to feel as though they are progressing through the game, even if they aren't anymore. So this is just something that was in my head bouncing around. It's obviously not fully developed. I don't really have any intention of submitting it as an idea, but it's just a way that I saw of accomplishing something similar while creating a more dynamic gameplay experience. So that's my thoughts on it. As long as the perks aren't too power creepy, we should be okay. So, all right. I realize that took a while. So if you guys have any thoughts on that or the perks in general, feel free to jump in right now.
Well, John, mixed feelings. As I said, I think going for 120 is something should be optional, something you decide to go towards, not because of rewards, but because you really love the skill and have the dedication to show that this is my area of expertise. So I can't really say I would support 120 that much, but...
Well, even just a little bit beyond 99 would work. But we're going to talk about something going to 120 in just a few moments. Also coming in February at the end, arriving February 27th, not January 27th, is the new Mystery Quest. The skill requirements are going to involve Slayer, Divination, and Runecrafting and be around level 40. So you can tell it's going to be an introductory quest. Yeah, but that's all we know right now.
Yeah, he said there was going to be 37 Slayer, 50 Divination, and I don't remember...
45 Runecrafting.
Yeah, there we have it. And also revealed that it was going to be a 5th Age quest. So it's not a god quest. So we know it's not
Thank
Evil
you.
Dave, for example.
Thank you.
So 5th Age, and... that makes one wonder what can it be, and
what if it's Elemental Workshop Part 5?
Oh no!
I would love for it to be Elemental Workshop Part 5.
I would too.
I actually, even though I'm an adventurer and really love quests, the last Elemental Workshop gave me such a trauma that I forgot entirely about it. So the next time I went down there to Elemental Workshop, which was at the release of Invention, and I was looking about the junk rates at the different bodies that could be made there. I entered there and was like, whoa, this is a whole new area. When did they add this? And I look at my quest log and realize that I did all this and I have completely no memory about it. So I don't know, but now I'm more experienced with quest. I have the Master Quest cape, so there shouldn't be. But it could also be the final of the Pirate Quest series.
Maybe.
Or it could be a Penguin Quest.
I don't think it would. You would see as low of requirements though for finale in the pirate quest line though.
Yeah,
I think
that.
Maybe it could be an introductory quest into why the wizard started having to deal with the rune span.
Oh, maybe, or maybe it's another Captain Picard quest, the sequel to Enlightened Journey.
I don't know. I hope it's the Elemental Workshop one.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see on that. But also, we got the first dev diary for the path to 120 Slayer. Now, Tycho, you said you're not a fan of things going to 120. So what do you think of 120 Slayer?
Well, I was there at RuneFest when they announced it. And that's was the last time I was in this podcast during September. You interviewed me. And that was the very last thing they announced at that. And Modo Spawn just said, oh, and we're going to raise the Slayer to 120.
Oh, yeah, there's one more thing. Yeah.
Yeah, one more thing. But I'm not a really fan of that. I think that 120, except for Dungeoneering and Invention, I can accept that, should be optional to the to like optional that if you really love the skill and you really want to show your dedication towards it, you can continue to train it after 99. And I think the master skill capes is a very good way to show that this is a skill I love and can continue doing all for year after year. But I don't really like the way to making it mandatory for the completionist cape or trying to build it on. I mean, maybe in the future we are going to see 120 in all skills, and maybe first then I can accept that if they raise all
I think that would
skills,
be a
but
mistake if they did it all at once. And we've talked about that
yeah.
before, Mr. Bistro. But, they talked about a lot of the core aspects of 120 Slayer and why they're doing it. And, you got to remember that these things were suggested by the players in last summer and then voted on. And then we heard at Runefest, which we're going ahead. And of course, 120 Slayer is one of them. So, without further ado, basically what they said in this video comes down to a few core points. A lot of the worries about 120 Slayer initially came about the grind that people would be facing, specifically the idea of losing their comp capes, their trim capes, their max capes, and so on. And to fix this, that they're going to be putting in a 3-month amnesty period for the completionist cape.
Ooh.
That's right. Now, they say a lot of
Yes.
people say they don't want to have an amnesty program for this, but Jagex's argument for amnesty coming from Jagex is the following, is that if there wasn't an amnesty period, players wouldn't give the new content a try, and they would opt to get it done before release instead. And then there would be absolutely no point to trying the new content when it arrives this summer with Metaphos. So the idea is that, we don't want you to, train your brains out to 120 Slayer, 104 million XP before June. So rather than that, just take your time when it comes out, enjoy the content, fully discover it. Don't try and get it all done before it arrives because that's not the core point of it. And with the whole aspect of surprise and expansions and Menaphos this year, they want to effectively give players a few months to explore the skill and explore the add-on to the skill to truly learn what it's about. So that's their argument for amnesty.
There's one easy way that Jagex could have handled this that would have had nothing to do with amnesty. They could have just shut their mouths. Seriously, you imagine how much development time they would have saved here if they had not said this. No one would have had to know about needing to emergency train to 120.
Oh, so you
No
think people are going to
amnesty.
do that now?
Well, yeah, it's gone over in my mind, so I can only imagine people that actually want to have their comp capes obviously training to 120 regardless of this amnesty. They just shouldn't have said anything.
Do you think doing the dev diary and the surveys specifically to tailor 120 Slayer towards the players is a mistake?
I think everything that they have talked about for this is a mistake. If they were going to release things, they should have had things maybe mid-development or getting pretty close to release and had options. Like, this is one way the players might like it, this is another way. That probably would have been cheaper than them having to go through multiple dev diaries, reworking things because players don't like it, and just giving it
Yeah,
to
it'll be
them.
interesting to see what
And
the first feedback is on this next time they do this, because
yeah, if this is the year of surprises, and I know that this was a player poll, they shouldn't have done this. The amnesty thing is going to, I it's go it's a can of worms, and they're opening it, and I don't like what's going to happen next. And we talked about this last week, and I can see this being an issue in the future.
at the same time, I see that they don't want their work to be spoiled. They don't want everyone to race for Wanted Slayer,
right?
So that when they release it, nobody will experience it. I mean, look at
and
Pest
that's
Control.
The problem.
They did a whole rework for it, and nobody cared.
Exactly.
And at least the least thing they want to do is at least see some happy faces,
yes,
to enjoy the content and not just
yes,
race against it. And,
absolutely.
Okay, too bad. Well,
absolutely.
Really,
you're hitting the nail right on the head here. And, you know, I think, you know, I thought, okay, this might be interesting, 120 Slayer. But now that you guys frame it this way, I think it's a horrible idea because there's two kinds of people in this game who are going to be doing Slayer. The first ones are people who do Slayer to train their combat, and, you know, that's fine. Then there are people who are just doing it to satisfy the requirements at the end of the day for max comp and trim. And if, you know, if you can get this done before the update comes out, what is the point of training afterwards? Jagex hits the nail on the head with that. So there's those people who want the requirement done, they're going to get it done before June. So we know that much. Now, on the other hand, people who just train Slayer for fun, are they going to want to get another, you know, 90, 91 million XP to get to 120 Slayer from level 99? People who just got there casually, are they going to want to do that? And now, I mean, they say they're going to put in the appropriate steps to ensure it's not grindy or anything like that to make it feel like the XP curve changes. But if you're still providing an increased amount of XP along the way, what's the point of adding the levels? I mean, surely we could find spots inside Slayer that aren't taken right now, right?
It's pretty crowded at the moment.
Yeah, Slayer is a pretty full thing, as most combat things in RuneScape are.
Okay, well,
I can't say there are any spots left. I mean, they released Repo Demons and Mammoth and two others at 96, and that's already pretty elite. So as they said in the in the diary, this gives a whole new area of rewards and content to give access to in the future. Now, it can be for quests, it can be for just regular PVM, it can be for several other things that have as yet to come.
Now. And, you know, that leads nicely into the next point, and that mechanics-wise, players in a slim majority on the survey that they put out last month said that they wanted harder creatures such as Ripper Demons. And that is, of course, a slim majority. But in the new Slayer dungeon, they say there'll be a mix of both types. You know, the casual laid-back Slayer that we already have from around 85 downwards, and then the harder, you know, Ripper Demon style creatures. And I think it's funny they mention Ripper Demons, because Ripper Demons are so horribly designed that if you have a poor internet connection, you can't do them. But, so there's that. There was also talk of increasing the difficulties of higher level Slayer creatures such as Dark Beasts and Abyssal Demons. They say that XP per hour won't be diminished too much, probably around 10% or so, maybe, if that. But there are some changes that'll be made to make them so that they're not, you know, such a lucrative task, and not outright nerfing the XP that they give or the drops, but just making them a little bit more smart and worthy of their level 90 Slayer designation. So, okay. I find myself slowly doubting the idea as we move on. You guys tell me if you're feeling the same after this, but the start of the dungeon will be around level 85 Slayer, going up to the range of 115 to 120. They say that this new expanded range of the Slayer skill will feel busy and rewarding, unlike Invention was when that was first released. And instead of forcing everyone to just complete content as quickly as possible, Amnesty will allow players to leisurely play through the content without needing to be forced to complete it off the bat. And, you know, this was at the end of the video, they talked about Amnesty again. So Jagex, you know, wants players to take the time to explore the content and find all the unique aspects of the skill. This is also partly why Jagex is keeping more from the players this year. Okay. And the feeling is that the Memorial Guthix prestige mechanic is the same thing that the design team wants to evoke with 120 Slayer. And at the end of the day, players shouldn't feel that their achievement for getting, you know, 120 Slayer beforehand or training it is devalued, because you've already achieved the level and will be able to take part in all the content that has been released when 120 Slayer comes out. So does that satisfy any further concerns about Amnesty?
No.
Well, I want Jagex to have that feedback about when it's released, that not everyone are 120 Slayer, that and they want more people actually to wait on it to see what they have to offer, because every artist out there wants feedback. If it's it can be everything from a YouTuber to someone drawing a painting to to any kind of art wants feedback. And I think it's Jagex going out and saying that you can wait and see what we have to offer. I'm perfectly okay with that. But I'm still skeptical about the amnesty period, but I still understand the actions of Jagex for wanting feedback, not like the pest control rework that they made a really good job out of it, but people just looked at it and said, yeah, you know, okay, it was fine, but you know what, I'm just going to move on.
All right. And then they ended off this dev diary by saying that a player who is playing efficiently with full potions, gear, and dedication might be able to crack 800k Slayer XP per hour at level 120. This is not set in stone, and the XP rates will be balanced to ensure that players are placed on a curve that is achievable for balancing, and that the curve is not too steep. So that is what Jagex has to say for us for the first dev diary of 120 Slayer.
That sounds like a really steep curve.
Yeah, 800k XP an hour at level 120.
Can you imagine that, though? It would take you around 200 hours to get max experience now,
if you're at 120, right? So
yeah,
I mean, is that truly what we're aiming for? I don't know, and I don't know if it should be that fast.
I guess we're going to get to a point where no one can get experience anymore. That's the new goal.
Yeah, and I have a solution for that everyone shot down numerous times in the past. So stay tuned for when people start getting 120 and start getting 200 mil and start complaining that they can't train their skills anymore. But of course, you can, of course, comment on the forums and on Twitter by using the hashtag DevDiaries on Twitter if you want to get in touch with them. So, Mr. Bistro, I would highly recommend that you do that and write something up, because that's the first time in a while I've heard you speak like that about a piece of content that's coming out. So I think that would be a good thing to do.
Well, yeah, I'm really unhappy with this. It removes any sense of achievement just for the sake of the fact that they had to announce it or do things the way they did. I don't know. There's other methods they could have done to achieve the 120k. There's other things they could have done.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree.
And this is not the right way.
Like, it doesn't sound, and it just sounds like it's being sped up so much that it's not going to be Slayer like it was.
No, we'll see in future dev diaries. I'm going to try to be positive, but this is probably like you mentioned, this is probably the most negative I've seen from any dev diary they've ever come out with. So,
but let them know, because that's what they want. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, the feedback, while it's still not too late to change things, that's why they are going out with it, because they want to be entirely sure this is what we want.
Oh, believe me. And you know, anytime we have significant differences with what they talk about in a dev diary, I make sure that we link the appropriate portion of the show on Twitter using that hashtag. So if they do see it, then that's great. So do watch out for that. You can help us in that endeavor by following us at RSBNB on Twitter. So, all right, we're going to move on to the listener questions right now. We got two of them. The first one is from Chodo, who's also from Clan Quest. So this is a four-parter, so I'll get reading this. So first up, number one, do we finally have a boss made for those people who keep complaining how easy PVM is? So what's your guys' answer to this?
Well, my answer is I can't say Nex makes it harder than Yakamaru, so I can't say this Nex, the Angel of Death, will silence those people. Yeah, of course, we had a hard time because of the secrecy, but not anymore. Not now that we know that we need a tank who does his job. We know we need a debuffer, and we know we need DPSers that are assigned to a specific quadrant and can do their job. And actually, I heard from my team that Nex has now been trioed, even. So it's going towards that Mod Ramen is going to Elsh his blue party hat if somebody manages to solo Nex. So it's slowly going towards it, and that's why I can't say that Nex, the Angel of Death, will silence the people who thinks PVM are too easy.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you make PVM too easy, you're definitely... I mean, if you make it too hard, you're definitely going to hear from people, so I don't think they can do that, but... All right. Any thoughts on that, Mr. Bistro?
I also say that there's never going to be a silence for a ceiling. You're going to hear those echoes no matter how high it is. Like at the end of the day, there's a Wooks out there, or there is someone out there that's going to do it, and people will follow that, and they will just get used to that pattern, and that's just the way combat in RuneScape is. So this boss, yes, it does take a lot of people right now, but we've only had it for a week. I think it's a little too early to say if this is going to be that really awesome boss for someone who wants to try and duo. But Trio already surprises me. And it honestly shouldn't, but it does. I think that there's never going to be a silence to these people.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Would you say that the drops are fair for its difficulty? And to recap, the only real drops that we have, in addition to the hideous resources it drops, the magic logs and the energy, are, of course, the level 90 wand and the prayers. So, and the pet, of course.
It drops a lot of rune items.
Yeah.
Some other stuff. I'd say the drops are pretty fair.
I don't know. I think the drops are a bit too low. I know it's not the same as raids, that where raids is guaranteed to be at least 1 mil of worth. But I think still it's a low, considering the risks you are taking, because it's still a hard boss. So when I get drop, I get all from 30k to 110. So I would like to see it raised by around 30k or something, because if you risk your life for 30k drop, I can't see that being beneficial.
I think that they need to get rid of all the primary skilling drops that this thing drops and work out a better way of providing loot for these bosses, because, you know, we have talked about it before that you devalue certain skills by doing this, and that doesn't really help the position for skills, and eventually, when crafting gets a rework, when woodcutting through fletching gets a rework, there's going to be talk about why these bosses were dropping these copious amounts of magic logs and divination energy products. So I think that there is definitely something that needs to be done with that. And, you know, with mining and smithing in the forefront, I really did hope that we were going to see a change in that, but I guess we haven't. So we already talked about how many times you guys have died to her, so just recap quickly how many times you guys each died.
10 in total. All
right.
I have 11 kills, so I guess for that it should be at least 20.
Okay, wow. All right. And finally, an easy question for everyone. What is your favorite color? So let's start with you, Tycho. What's your favorite color?
Oh, it's easily blue. If you see a guy walking down the streets with a blue jacket, blue skirt, blue jeans, blue shoes, well, that's me.
All right. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I'd say mine is blue as well, but purple comes in a close second.
Oh, the color of royalty. All right. Mine is green, and it's a very specific shade of green. If you use HTML color numbers, it's 26B468.
Good grief.
And I got a sample of it up on the screen right now for those of you guys watching on YouTube. 26B468. So that is my favorite color. And yes, I do have a selection of my favorite colors saved around in swatches with their HTML color numbers available, and I do know a few of them. So. All right. Thank you, Choto. The next one is from Trekkie. Back to the 120 Slayer idea. So with 120 Slayer coming into the horizon, what special rewards would you like to see in Slayer? A new version of the Slayer helmet, the ability to choose Slayer tasks that you want, or to increase the chance of certain drops?
Well, I heard about the ability to give Slayer tasks to other, and while it sounds like you can ask your friends a lot of favors suddenly, that if you give me that task and you give me that task and you give me that task, then this will create my perfect XP curve, then I don't know. But at the same time, I hope they can somehow. How do you say it, that they make it very social in a way, that more co-op, more that you interact with other players instead of, and not just that you go to somebody who's a 120 Slayer and just ask a task out of him instead of going to more one. So, but that's what I'm really looking forward to, a way to choose Slayer tasks or get assign someone Slayer tasks, but in a social way that isn't overpowered.
All right. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Slayer dungeon in construction.
All right. Fair enough.
For me, no comments there, Shane?
No, I'm going to add in a few ideas that I have, and I'm going to say I want something nice and general from this, and I would like a level of balance that is struck that allows us to have high-level Slayer creatures like Rune Dragons and the four that came out in November of 2015, you know, the Wyverns, the Ripper Demons, the Camels, and the Mammoths. A mix between those and the classic Slayer creatures of, you know, Abyssal Demons, Necreals, Gargoyles, and so on, that had their own unique mechanics as well, and maybe even little equipment things that you had to use to kill them. I would like a nice mix and balance between those two types of Slayer. And with that, I would love to see a return to the old Slayer XP system, where, I don't know if you guys remember, but it took months for someone to get an Abyssal Whip. And, you know, those ways of bringing items into game, the Abyssal Whip was supreme for so long. And I think it would be nice if we could go back to that, providing that way as a method of getting weapons, or maybe even just providing the way to create these weapons with the new mining and smithing skill through Slayer, much like the original Abyssal Whip was. So those are my two biggest things that I would like to see from this. And I guess if I had to choose a third thing, it would be that we don't increase the XP per hour so much that within a small amount of time, people are able to get 200 mil. Because in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with a slow skill, slow as in how runecrafting was slow when Invention first came out. Or I'm sorry, when runecrafting first came out.
I agree. Slayer, there's no way that skill should be going as fast as Dungeoneering. It
Dungeoneering is fast?
Yeah. I run through some larges and get my 200k.
Well, yeah. I'm just thinking about it. When you say it in that way, it may be true. I got 64 mil done XP for my Master Quest cape, and after that I got a trauma from it, so I hid in a corner and cried and stayed away from Diamondheim for I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and never even looked at it anymore. But thinking about it, that I could do that in like the previous double XP weekend and then 1 or 2 weeks after, then I guess it was quick in a way.
Yeah. It's no joke how fast Dungeoneering can be. It is, I would say, if you are with people that know what they're doing, it can be that 800k experience an hour, which is why it's concerning for Slayer. If you think Dungeoneering is fast, how are people going to receive that for a known to be slow skill?
Yep, and that's precisely why we got to highlight that in this dev diary. So I'm glad that we were able to make that point. All right, thank you, Trekkie. This next one's from Magic King, and it's a very general question. What are your double XP weekend's plans for Game Blast? I believe he means Game Jam. So, okay.
Yeah. Can what you guess what your skill I'm going to do?
Slayer?
No, I'm going back to Diamondheim. I'm going back to do the very last bit I haven't touched since I cried in a corner because I had to get 117th dunge for the Master Quest cape. I'm going for 120 dunge, and I'm going to do it right there and right then.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
There's a theme. I'm also going for 120 dungeoneering.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay.
After that, I will let the rest of my double experience go to waste or use it in Slayer.
I can also add that 120 dunge is also the last requirement I have before the completionist cape. So it's a good thing.
Why didn't you get some amnesty on that this summer there, Tycho?
Yeah, maybe that. So I will see if I regret not putting it on Slayer by then. But only time will tell.
All right. As for me, I actually do have some diversity planned, unlike these two here. I do plan on using my protein cogs for invention, because I have I think it's like 800 of them stacking up or something. I got a lot of them. So I'm going to be using those for invention on double XP weekend. I'm also going to be doing herb lore. Haven't decided which potion yet, but I have a good stack of herbs in my bank that's going to be used. So I don't know if that'll be perfect plus juju potions or maybe super prayer renewals. We'll just have to wait and see what the market's doing, but I do and have been actively gathering those ingredients over the past little while. So that's what I plan on doing on double XP weekend once again. Thank you.
You could sponsor the PVM community by making combination potions that are tradable.
Yeah, that is an option. That is an option. But there's only really two of them, the Super Prayer Renewal and the Super War Master Potion, because all the other ones are limited specifically for you and your creation, which is unfortunate. But there does need to be some rewards for high-end herb lore. So.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, that does us in for questions this week. We're going to move on to tech news. But first, just a reminder, if you want to send those questions in, email us or call. The email address is questions@rsbnb.com, and the phone number is 571-57BNB, 571-572-2632. And, of course, you can also leave us a DM on Twitter if that platform is your thing. All right. On to tech news we go. So, a little bit of news here from the Apple front. Apple has joined a partnership on AI as a founding member. So this is Partnership on AI. It's a new group that seeks to educate the public about AI. It was founded in September. And, you know, there is a general misconception out there about what AI is and what it is not. So that's why it's important with this to discuss various themes, including ethics, piracy, privacy, interoperability, and reliability of various AI devices out there. Apple joins Amazon, Google, Facebook, IBM, and Microsoft, who are already a part of this. And Apple will be represented by Tom Gruber, who is the head of the Siri department at Apple. So I think this is a very interesting thing going forward, because if you look at the current landscape of the technical world, AI is very much on the forefront. And so many people out there have no idea what it is, and quite honestly get scared of it because of movies like Terminator, and I think there was one called Intelligence or something along the lines of that as well. And that is nowhere near where we are with AI at this point. As it stands right now, AI is going to be used to sort through information faster and be able to disseminate the information and learn what that information is about so it can be better presented to users. And that's where we're going with AI right now. So, you guys have any thoughts on this?
It's very good to inform the community, but because as you just said, Terminator scares a lot of people, and I think it was a really good movie, but it really makes people think twice, which I think is good. And here they have the opportunity to clear misunderstandings and show this is the page we are on at the moment.
Yeah, because, everyone's got these little devices in their pocket, you know, Siri, Google Now, Cortana and whatnot, and even Facebook Messenger do it. So there definitely does need to be discussion with this happening, and I think it's good that they're doing this. So Apple being there is good, shows their commitment to that as well. All right. Our next story is related to Snapchat. Do either of you guys use Snapchat?
Nope.
A little bit.
Okay. So Snapchat is, of course, the platform that allows people to send instant pictures or videos to each other and then have them disappear after a certain amount of time. So, whoa. That video played loud. I'm guessing you guys didn't hear that on Skype, but listeners will have heard that. This past week, Snapchat announced that their IPO would come in March, and they're raising an initial $3 billion for this, which is expected to value the company anywhere between $20 and $25 billion. So it would make it the priciest valuation since Facebook in U.S. tech IPO history. And with this, just a couple of notes about the company. As of late, Snap has had $405 million in sales in 2016, up from $58.7 million in 2015. And the company, though, had a net loss in 2016 of $514 million, up from $292 million the year before. So, Snapchat is going to be an IPO worth between $20 and $25 billion, but they're losing $500 million a year. Does this seem fishy to anyone else?
Yeah. They're going way too high. This is a mistake. I don't know how they don't see this themselves.
I mean, obviously they're capable of making money, which is what they care about, but at the same time, I mean, $20 billion for a company that's losing $500 million a year, that's not profitable right now. So I guess the question for investors should be, how is Snapchat going to turn this around and become profitable if they're being worth this much? I mean, I don't think we're in a tech bubble right now. I mean, there's really nothing as hot as it was a number of years ago, but this is just huge. And I'm guessing it comes from largely the ad-supported side of Snapchat. So, I don't know. I never thought I'd see the day that an instant picture sharing application would be worth $20 billion. So,
who would have thought?
I mean,
I don't think they're anywhere near what Facebook was valued or should be valued
at. It's more than Facebook was initially valued at. And I don't know about you guys, but it certainly seems wrong that this is happening. This is money, I think, that isn't there and is potentially a recipe for disaster if the market were to turn bad for all these companies. Because there's so much money floating around in the tech world, and they haven't experienced bad market really since, you know, the late 90s. Granted, it got worse in the mid-2000s because of the whole market downturn and huge recession, but still, they were doing well back then. So these tech companies really haven't had to weather a huge storm in the technological side of the market. And when you do that, when you have companies losing this much money that have unsustainable business models, yes, Snapchat, but also Twitter, that's a recipe for disaster. So
yeah, I think that there is a storm brewing for these companies, or the internet in general when it comes to the flow of money. But I'm not going to go into that because it gets really complex.
Yeah, most definitely.
On what I've found out over the past couple of weeks, even.
Yep. All right. And on to some good news, profitability-wise. Nintendo has released sales and reported a $569 million profit driven largely by software, including Pokemon Sun and Pokemon Moon for the 3DS. This also had the net benefit of driving sales of their hardware, in this case the 3DS. They also have had good luck with Mario Run for iOS, which released in December. So it certainly seems as though Nintendo might have found their alternate rather than selling game consoles and traditional games, with having huge successes for the Pokemon and Mario franchise, one of which released on the classic handheld and another released on the mobile gaming platform. So, very interesting for Nintendo, and I am so happy to hear this news. How about you guys?
Yes, I'm happy as well to hear it because there is one point where you look back and say, yeah, this is the way we have always done it, and but we need to change with the times. And Nintendo reporting this makes me happy that they really got this right.
Yeah, and also, of course, coming is the release of the Nintendo Switch, which is going to be released, I believe, in March or April. And, of course, they say this is likely contributing to the falling Wii U sales, and that the expectations for the Switch are on par with their targets with 0.76 million units sold, so roughly 760,000, down 75% year-on-year. So obviously they're having trouble with the living room consoles, but handhelds and software is doing great for Nintendo. And I think that, you know, with Pokemon Go, Pokemon Sun, Moon, and, of course, Mario Run, I think they might have just found what they need to do to stay relevant in the modern world of gaming.
I think that Nintendo is sitting in a really good position And that the Switch is going in the right direction for if they were to do hardware, what they should do for hardware. So I think Nintendo over the next few years, it's going to be pretty optimistic. I've heard some really optimistic numbers when it comes to the lifetime sales, people's forecasts for how many units to sell in the upwards of past 40 million. So that would be good. And if this doesn't work out, then I think Nintendo has an out.
Yeah, definitely.
They have this support from the community. I mean, the day Pokemon Go was launched, the people just heard the word Pokemon and they instantly downloaded the application. They didn't check for more details. Just something like that proves that Nintendo has a really good opportunity to continue and go forth with this.
Indeed. All right, well, let's move on to the Skill of the Month update. We do have two of those to go through, January and the very first one of February. We saw the end of the very stagnated January Slayer Skill of the Month with GemAndy52 winning with 18.3 million XP gained, while Parnassius got 5.7 million XP and Flash got 4.1 million XP gained. So turning the page over to February, we do have a fishing skill of the month, which allows for people to train much more at their leisure, and that allows for much more XP coming in. We currently have Adiron Cronon, a.k.a. Touchpad Pro, with 2.2 million XP gained. Second place is GemAndy52 with 1.5, and third is Parnassius with 1.3 million experience gained. So interesting to see where this one's going to go, of course, because this is a double XP weekend month, so there will be obviously a huge spike around the middle of the month that shows double XP weekend and could potentially shift the graph depending on how people play then. So
yeah, I have to say those numbers are very impressive for just 24 hours.
Yep.
Yeah, very impressive. And during double XP weekend, no sleeping at all.
Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that. I will not do that.
Others who won't sleep, I can promise you that.
Oh, yet. I know. I know a few of them myself. So, but anyways, we do have some achievements of the week also this week. A good selection of them. So, first up is Barrage Tank with 99 farming on the 1st of February. Congratulations. Penguin got 99 prayer on February 1st. Such XP waste. 99 Firebake, he got the first as well. Penguin also 99 Slayer on the 1st. Also continuing with Penguin all the way down, also on the 1st. 99 Dungeoneering, Thieving, Farming, Summoning, and Fletching all on January 1st. So
what
it looks
a day.
It looks like someone was definitely targeting that day to get some XP in 99, so congratulations, Penguin, Barrage Tank, and Such XP Waste for that. Some nice achievements there. All right, so now comes the point of the show in which we talk about Pick of the Week. Mr. Bistro, do you know what my Pick of the Week is?
Star Trek?
No.
Star Wars?
No, of course not. Believe it or not, it is the Raspberry Pi 2 Model B.
Now,
this came out last year, and I'm sorry, Model 3B. I've messed the numbers up, but it's the third generation computer from Raspberry Pi. So this is a computer that is $35. It is the size of a credit card. You simply flash a version of Linux to a micro SD card, pop it in the Raspberry Pi, plug it in with an HDMI port, and it's powered by a micro USB, and you get a computer that runs Linux and can do pretty much anything any modern smartphone can do. It's good for little DIY projects, good if you need a little server that you want to run, you know, Plex Media Center off of, for example. Yes, the chip on this is indeed powerful enough to run the decoding side of Plex. I've done it. So It's a 1.2 gigahertz quad-core ARM V8 CPU, so that's why you can run the decoding side of Plex. But basically, I think the reason this is pick of the week for me is because it's a little computer the size of a credit card that can replace what an old Linux server used to do for simple things like providing a monitoring service for your routers, for example, or providing you with a little media server. If you don't want to buy an Apple TV, you can plug it into your TV. Or if you need something to run the actual Plex media server like I'm doing, it can do that as well. So anything you would ordinarily use a small Linux server for, you can pretty much use the Raspberry Pi 2 or Raspberry Pi 3 Model B to do. It also comes with 1 gig of RAM, 4 gigabyte or 4 USB ports, Ethernet, audio jack. So it is a fully featured computer, and the best part about it is it's only $35. And you can find it online or from raspberrypi.org. And they do provide their own version of Linux for it that you just copy over to an SD card, and away you go. So also great for tinkering if you want to learn how to code or you want to mess with Linux and you maybe want to do some hardware stuff as well. Just a great little device to have, pick up for any use case that you see fit. I found two uses, so I would highly recommend.
Does it work with Bluetooth? Yes, it does. That means you can Bluetooth VPN over onto it too.
Yeah, and with Bluetooth you can do lots of things with peripherals with this new device, and this is a good reason to get the Raspberry Pi 3 because it has Bluetooth and it also has Wi-Fi. So I mean, in theory, it's 802.11 and Wi-Fi, so you could, in theory, use this as a wireless access point if you wanted to. I mean, It all comes down to software. So pretty much anything you can think of, you can use it for. So if you're in need of a quick little Linux machine that's the size of a credit card, doesn't require any fans on it, this is probably the thing you want to pick up.
Yeah. And there's lots of tutorials all over the internet for things you can do with these. Yep. I know that I had a pick in the past talking about the Pi Zero. So.
Yeah, and that's the smaller version, of course.
Yes, they're just really, really fun time to mess with.
Indeed. All right. So what you been up to this week on RuneScape, Tycho?
Oh, well, next, the Angel of Death is definitely what I have been doing this week, and then I've been nexing the regular nex and got the Pernix chaps that I really wanted because as an adventure I want to feel safe, so I've been walking around in my tank armor for a very, very long time, but now that I'm really going to PVM more, I really need a power armor, especially if I'm doing the DPS role. So now that I have the Pernix, I have augmented it and I put some preliminary perks. I will make some more advanced perks later that really gives me the top-notch DPS. But yeah, that power armor and Angel of Death, and I can tell you something interesting, that when I did my first next Angel of Death kill, it was during a mass, and you need to be within the top 8 DPSers to get the 2 lore books. That is a Master Quest Cape requirement, and I got those books in tank armor without any specific DPS equipment. So just to you all out there, if you want to do good DPS, don't just look at your gear, look also at your ability rotation and when to do what.
All right, sounds good. And what do you think of, you know, having combat requirements on the Master Quest Point Cape?
Well, in the end, we adventurer needs to know a bit of everything. We know need to know the life of a skiller for the quest requirements. We need how to defeat horde bosses, and we need also to do a bit of bank standing to get the right things. So seeing it as, but I think Nex is a bit extreme for a master quest cape requirement, but in the end of the day, when you have all the roles and when you have everything planned out, and as an adventurer you know a lot, it's doable, but due to you still have to be within the top 8 DPSs, I think it's a little over the edge for it.
All right, fair enough. And Mr. Bistro, what have you been up to this week in addition to your next masses?
Not a whole lot. I've just been sick, but when I have had a chance to get on RS, I've just been doing a little bit of divination, saving up some of that stuff that I'm going to kind of pawn off in a week or two when the prices are at their best.
All righty. So. As for me this week, I actually did a few things interesting, you know, herb runs and whatnot, getting ready for double XP weekend in that regard. But aside from that, I put together my outfit that was determined by the outfit competition that I ran over the past 2 weeks. So I did ultimately end up choosing a submission from Wolfie. I used a combination of both of his pieces of content that he provided, and I will just say that I am really pleased with the way this turned out, and it just looks really nice. I'll put links in the show notes to the final outfits that I went, but you know, I really got to say thank you to Wolfie for throwing this together. It's better than anything I could have come up with, and I think it really fits with the whole theme that I was going for. So there was that. Also, I'm not one that's typically known to, you know, focus in on doing specific requirements for, you know, completing things and whatnot. I just do it on my own pace. So what happened this week is I finally caught a crystal impling, however many years it's been, 2 years and a bit since Priftina's finally came out. So I did manage to finally complete that task of seeing a crystal impling somewhere and catching it. So that was pretty fun. But, you know, beyond that, not too much on RS, just focusing on those double XP weekend preparations for Herblore. So that's about it. So I am thankful that you guys all joined us here for this episode. And you, Tycho, for staying up so late to do this with us.
Yeah, it's 6:30 a.m.
That's right. Oh, boy. And, of course, Mr. Bistro for co-hosting the last quarter and a month with me. You've done a great job, and I think the listeners really enjoyed hearing your combat perspective on things. And let me just say, you've done a good job at this, because it's not the ordinary combat perspective that most people would expect coming from someone. So it's very unique in that regard, and for that I thank you for being on the podcast for these last 4 months.
It's been quite a ride.
Yes, it has. So with that being said, we'll be back next week with a new co-host for the first major update of February. And with that being said, thank you for sharing your time with us, and we'll see you then. Bye, everyone.